You're listening to Immaculate Conception Podcasts, recorded every Sunday at the 11 o'clock Mass at our new church located at 411 Palmer Road in Columbia, Illinois. For more information about Immaculate Conception, please go to www.icc-columbia-il.us. Our pastor is Father Carl Scheer. And now, enjoy the podcast.
As always, it is an honor to be here with you to celebrate the liturgy with Immaculate Conception Parish. In our, it's still new to me. I'm trusting that it's new to most everyone here, the new church building. First priestly assignment, right? There's always a certain attachment that I feel here. So it's an honor to be here with you, and it's an honor to be here with you particularly on this weekend because of our readings. That gospel reading is one that is routinely humbling to me just to proclaim it, never mind preach on it. So much has been written, so much has been said about the Good Samaritan, right? We know the Good Samaritan law. You help someone out in need of help, you can't be tried or brought up on charges or anything like that, at least so our law goes, so it's supposed to be, that you can't be held responsible if you're trying to help someone. It's called the Good Samaritan law. Our law, the law of our country, is affected by this gospel. 2,000 years of staying power in law. That's an amazing thing. That's powerful. It's humbling. So me in law. When I was a little boy, our family rule, our family law, if you will, among them, was the kids go to bed at 8 o'clock. That was our family rule, right? And I remember it well because I'm a morning person, not an evening person. So go to bed at 8 o'clock meant, yeah, we get to go to bed. Come on, everybody, let's go to bed. I'm one of five kids. Not all of my siblings had the same sentiment about going to bed. That rule wasn't, especially with my older sister, was not met with the same vigor, right? She didn't celebrate that particular family rule quite as much as I did. Law has different effects on all of us, does it not? That particular law, right, the Wagner family, kids go to bed at 8 o'clock until such and such an age. Not that there was ever really an age, anyway. But that kind of law is something we might just call it social law. It's kind of social practice. It helps us get along. We get by, we get through the day. It gave my parents a couple of hours to unwind, right? There was a reason for it. There was a reason why they set that as the rule of the house. We needed sleep. There were plenty of good reasons for it, right? Not unlike, say for us, traffic laws. There's a reason why we set, as a society, speed limits. Safety, gas mileage. We could list a few things, right? There's a reason for it. It's something that we create as human beings, for good governance, to get by. Good reasons, not necessary, but important. Agreeable, we can more or less agree on them. And then there is what we might call natural law. We heard in today's second reading that all of creation has come to us, has come about because of Christ, out of Christ, that there is this law that all has come to us, everything that is created has come to us through Christ, and there's order, there's rationality, there's law to all of creation. We know this. We know this very simply. If we look out the windows, we can see that corn is growing. We know that corn takes a certain amount of time to come to full fruit, right? If you don't get corn in by such and such a date, it's going to be tricky to get a good harvest at the end of the year. A simple example of the natural law. corn takes a certain amount of time to grow, which is why it can be grown here rather readily, as long as we get it in on time. Beans, the same thing. And we could go on and on. We can look around us and see that there is law governing nature. Physics, all of the sciences are dependent upon the laws governing nature and discovering them and what they mean and how they work and all of that. Today, our first reading and even more poignantly our gospel reading invite us to consider even more fundamentally divine law. That law that the book of Deuteronomy says is not distant. It's not off far away. We don't have to ask someone, hey, go over there and get it. We don't have to hunt it down. It's in our mouths and in our heart. What is right? What is true? What is ultimately just? Is that close to us? Sorry, I can't not smile at that. That is hugely consoling to me. To know that. To know that what is the right thing to do in any situation is not something distant, is not far off, but in us. That's an amazing thing. That's an amazing gift. That's remarkable. How awesome is it that the law of God is that close to us? That doesn't make it easy. And that's exactly what the gospel's about. A scholar of the law, one who clearly knows the answer, he's there to challenge Jesus. What's the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus gives you answer that question. You already know it. It's great. That's a great retort that Jesus gives, right? What do you think? How do you read it? Love God with all you got, and your neighbor is yourself. And that's completely unoriginal. Every rabbi at that time knew that. It was a consensus. They all agreed. Love God with everything you have, and your neighbor is yourself. The question, the outstanding question, was what the scholar asks. So who's my neighbor? Who do I have to love? Can I put some people outside of that neighbor category? I'd like to do that sometimes, not gonna lie, right? And maybe all of us here know that feeling. Don't have to love that person, not in the neighbor category. That's basically what the scholar of the law is saying. Okay, so who's my neighbor? If I can count some people outside of that category, well, then I don't have to love them. And then we get that profound story. The one that we all know so well. The Good Samaritan. The Good Samaritan. This is an interesting story. So first, there's a priest who sees the man beat up on the side of the road. And following the law, as does the Levite who comes behind him, following the law passes by. Because had he gone and helped him, if he was going up to celebrate the liturgies in Jerusalem, he would have been made unclean. He couldn't do his job. His job required, the law of his job required that he not help this person. He wouldn't have been able to do what he was supposed to do for the people in Jerusalem. He was following the law and he walked to the other side. And then there's the Samaritan, who by definition is a lawbreaker. When he woke up that morning, was one guilty of kind of a fundamental lawbreaking. He didn't worship God correctly. In fact, that's like the number one in the list of 10, right? In the 10 commandments, right? He's breaking it, the first one right out of the gate. He's a felon. put it into our contemporary terms. The guy is a lawbreaker. Now, let's see what he does. He comes across this man beat up, in need of help. And what does he do? Does he help him? Yes, a lot. A lot. Puts the equivalent of medicine on his wounds, oil and wine. Then bandages them from his own stores. He's taking all of this, whatever he had with him. And then, accepting walking, gets off of his animal, puts this guy on it, takes him to an inn, covers the expense, sees to his care there, and then, if that's not enough, he leaves money behind with someone he may not even know, who could just as easily take advantage of him, and says, here, take this, and if you spend more, I'll cover the cost on the way back, but make sure you care for him. He's putting money, all of that on the line. Incredibly vulnerable. That's a remarkable expression of love. Especially for a felon. A remarkable expression of what it is to live that law that can be so tough, that divine law that is in our mouths and in our hearts, that all we have to do, that all that remains is for us to act it out. That's why we look to this Samaritan and call him good. Because even though he's considered a lawbreaker in one regard, and a pretty serious one at that, he knew what it meant to say, this man is my neighbor. It's this guy who's in need, and I can do something about it. And does it. And does it more than just a little, but really puts himself out there, really accepts the cost that it takes to live out this love, to live out this law that we're charged with, to love one another. To love God with all we've got and our neighbor as ourselves. It's an amazing thing, this divine law. It's an amazing thing that we're charged to. Challenging, yes, and it's a remarkable thing to look at the Good Samaritan and to know, to hear again this Sunday, those words of Deuteronomy, that we can do it. It's in our mouths. We already profess it. It's in our hearts. It's already there. All we have to do is extend it to those around us. It may not be that we find someone beat up and half dead on the side of the road, but there are plenty of those folks that we would like to say, not my neighbor, or not my brother, not my sister, not my mom, not my dad. That must be your fill in the blank, sister, brother, family, friend, what have you. Maybe the challenge for us this Sunday, this week, as we consider our call to live divine love, is to consider just that. What are those neighbors? Who are those neighbors that we're trying to say aren't? Because after all, as we celebrate this Eucharist, that's what Christ does for us. As we celebrate this Eucharist, as we encounter Christ in this celebration, we hear that same message to us. We encounter that same message that we're loved even if we're not ready to accept who our neighbor is, even if we want to push people away, even if we're not ready to love, even if that law is not something that we've acted on all the time. That's an amazing gift. One more amazing gift that we encounter in this celebration that we remember each time we come together. Maybe this week, may we all be able to celebrate this law, the most simple law of all, the law of love, in our mouths, written on our hearts, given to us by God.